Hello, I'm Guy Foster, and in this week's podcast, I'm speaking once again to Ajay Tyagi, manager of the UTI India Dynamic Equity Fund. And this is a fund that's done really well. But bear in mind that this isn't investment advice. We can't guarantee sources from outside Bruindolf, and tax legislation and allowances can change. And please remember as well that when investing, your capital is at risk. Investment values can increase or decrease because of currency fluctuations, particularly when investing in India, and future performance can differ from that of the past. So bear all of that in mind as we find out why the Indian market has been one of the more resilient emerging markets. And apologies in advance, the sound quality wavers a little at points, but hopefully won't inhibit your enjoyment of the podcast too much. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Bruin podcast. And we're going to be looking at one of the better performing emerging markets in this edition. Now, we're pleased to be welcoming back for this podcast a previous guest, Ajay Tyagi, manager of the UTI India Dynamic Equity Fund. The market's done pretty well. The fund's done really, really well. So we're thrilled to welcome Ajay back. Now, I think if we look back over the last year, it was very much a year of a problem that was obviously shared by all of the major regions of the world. And as we look into 2021, it's becoming a bit more fragmented. There's lots of disparity, obviously, in the case of things like the pace of vaccine rollout. And where I am in the UK is a real sense that this is just sort of one last push until some sort of end to this crisis. Now, we're looking forward to all businesses being open by June after a few very strict months of lockdown. But Ajay, could you give us an indication of how the battle against COVID is going in India?
Sure. Hi, Guy, and it's great to be back here with you again. So let me just dial back a bit and take you through what happened in India over the course of the last 12 months. We had a very, very strict lockdown in the months of March, April, and May. And I think that was possibly the strictest that we would have seen anywhere in the globe. And post that, we saw a very gradual opening up of the economy. In fact, there was a plan which was worked out by the central government, the federal government of India. It was called the Unlock Plan. And it was only in phases that businesses were allowed to open up. I think as a result of this very gradual unlock, India possibly, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed as I speak, India possibly was able to avoid the second wave or the third wave like some countries have seen. We peaked out sometime in September. That was the month when we were actually clocking something like 100,000 fresh cases every day. From that point onwards, we've seen a very gradual decline, but a very sure decline. Sometime towards December of last year, we were clocking in about 20,000 new cases a day. February was the lowest for us at about 10 to 12,000 new cases a day. And over the last two or three weeks, we've seen a slight increase in those cases, taking us back to somewhere around 18 to 20,000 cases. Now, some bit of this to our mind is because of not just the opening up of businesses, but also because of the fact that in the bigger cities like Mumbai and Delhi, metros and the local trains, which were shut all this while, have been allowed to open up. As a result of which, we've seen some increase in cases. But here's the good news. Overall mortality, India has seen totally 11 million cases till date. Overall mortality has been 1.4%. Over the last two or three weeks, as we have seen a slight increase in number of cases again, mortality is at 0.55%. And I think most epidemiologists here in India are saying that the virus has lost its virulence, because of which the mortality rates are low. Now, with this background, I can only state that the central government has been saying that we will only continue to open up activities. In fact, we're not envisaging any further lockdowns. If lockdowns were to happen, they will be limited to either a few areas within a particular city, if required, the entire city, but no big scale lockdowns are envisaged in India, as a result of which we see economic activity only improving over the coming months. And we've already seen a very strong evidence of that in the last quarter numbers, which was the quarter ending December 2020, which has shown a very strong and sharp revival in growth, again, on account of the fact that businesses have been opened up and we expect them to remain open as we move ahead. Yeah.
So what's, I mean, high level then, what's the impact been on business? Has been it's obviously still been a very jarring experience for the commercial sector.
Correct. So we can again break this up into two parts. The first part, starting from April of last year to, let's say, about June or July, was that part of this pandemic when hardly any business happened except for the essentials. As a result of which, depending on whether you fell into the essential category, stroke staple category, or you fell into the discretionary category, businesses were down on one end at about 5-10% to, let's say, as high as 60-70%. But then what we've seen in the last 3-4 months is, like I said, businesses on the discretionary side coming out and surprising even the most aggressive estimates and growing in some cases as high as 50-60%. Let me just give you the example of certain electrical durables businesses in this country, by which I mean fans, refrigerators, I would mean microwave ovens, lighting which goes into the household and so on. I mean, this sector has shown as high as about 50-60% growth in the quarter ending December. When we speak to corporates to figure out whether this is just pent-up demand or is it structural demand coming back, we realize that it is perhaps not just pent-up demand, because corporates are saying that we are getting the same customer come back to us for repeated purchases. Therefore, it ought to be structural rather than just pent-up. So all I can say is that the last quarter has been a very sure return back to growth. We just need to see some more data over the coming quarters to be extremely sanguine about the fact that, yes, this is our journey back to, let's say, 6.5-7% real GDP growth, something which you know, India has clocked on the average over the last 10 years.
So what about the financial sector? It's obviously a sector that's kind of in the news all over the world at the moment. I mean, how has that been bearing up? And do you worry about the loan quality given the stresses business has been through?
Sure. I think that's a very important question, because banking is pretty much the lifeline of the corporate sector. And in India, we've seen a bad phase of the banking sector between 2013-14 to about 2018. And if credit slows down, obviously economic activity also slows down. The good news here, again, is the positive surprise that we have seen across the banking sector, I would say. Now, let me just give you a couple of data points. When we started the year, sometime in April of 2020, so that's the beginning of the financial year for us, most banks and most analysts would have estimated the stressed assets for the industry as a whole possibly reaching double digits, from, let's say, about 3-4% on an average to about 9-10% because of this pandemic. As quarters went by, this figure actually got revised downwards in subsequent quarters, to the extent that when quarter three got reported, and corporates and bankers in particular were much more sure about the outcomes on stressed assets, these numbers have gotten revised and they are somewhere in the mid-single digits now. The good news is that in the months of, I would say, between June to August, all of India's large banks, and I would say except for one, pretty much all of them raised huge amount of capital, because that was the time when they all thought that possibly we could look at elevated slippages. Therefore, this is just the right time to bolster their net worth in order to improve their adequacy ratios. And I think that money has come in very handy, because even though the outcomes have been much, much better than what we would have anticipated, but because of this capital raise, all the big banks in India have used the capital to clean up and provide more than, I should say, much more than what is required. So they are sitting on excess provisioning on one end, while on the other hand, slippages have been much lower than anticipated. So therefore, we feel that the impact of the pandemic on Indian banking sector will be very, very limited, because most banks have already cleaned up their balance sheet and they are going into this new financial year starting 1st of April with a very clean slate, and therefore the ability to again provide credit to the economy. Yeah.
So it's a, I mean, it's quite a safe or is a relatively safe sector. Is it is it one with attractive returns going forwards as well?
I would agree with that view, for the simple reason that in certain parts of the market, we've seen valuations climb up significantly higher than their averages over the last 5 years. Banking sector, although we've seen a very sharp uptick in valuations, but they are still only just about slightly higher than their averages, rather than being one standard deviation or two standard deviation above the averages, which some of the other sectors have witnessed. So from a risk reward perspective, I feel that there is still steam left in the banking sector. And like I said, we came back fairly reassured after the quarter three reporting by banks in terms of cleaning up of their balance sheets. Yeah.
Okay, so in the UK, we've actually had our budget reasonably recently, just last week, in fact. But I think the Indian one was just a little bit before then, but must still be fairly fresh in the memory. Can you talk about what impact that's had on the investment environment?
Sure. So Guy, I think the budget of this year was a big departure from the budgets of the last 6 years. And I say 6 years because Mr. Modi has been in power for almost 7 years. So this was his seventh budget, so to speak. And departure because Mr. Modi, ever since he came to power, has been walking the path of fiscal prudence. He's been wanting to bring down the fiscal deficit in the country, something which was actually first talked about by his predecessor, and Mr. Modi continued on that path, which is always a sensible thing to do, and most investors like countries when they tread the path of fiscal prudence. But I think 2020 was a very strange year for countries around the world, economies around the world, because every country had to actually become expansionary to support businesses, to support the population at large. India had a similar problem. In fact, in India's case, the problem was a bit pronounced because, as you're aware, we do have a big part of our population below the poverty line. So therefore, the government had to support this part of the population. Our fiscal deficit touched 9% of GDP as a result. And most of us investors and analysts would have thought that Mr. Modi will again lay down the path for prudence and would want to bring down this number significantly in the coming years. Instead, what he's done is he's actually targeting 6.8% fiscal deficit in this current year, starting 1st of April. And basically, in the next 5 years, bringing it down to 4.3%. So therefore, in the process, the government has decided to be expansionary. They've basically given themselves room to prime the pump, use the money to get into industries which have a very strong multiplier impact. So for instance, I can quote that the budget talks about huge outlays into the infrastructure sector, within that predominantly roads and railways, which would have a significant multiplier impact. And they're also wanting to spend money on low-cost housing, which also would have a very strong multiplier impact. So I think this is what the Indian budget for this year was, signaling that the government is ready to be expansionary for a couple of more years. Of course, bringing it down each successive year, but still giving themselves room. Yeah.
And it's interesting, that's obviously been pretty well received by the financial markets as well. It's the kind of thing that you could imagine spooking some foreign investors. But as I say, the Indian market's done pretty well. It's not suffering the plunge that the Chinese stocks have been experiencing recently. But you mentioned valuations a bit earlier and how some of them are quite elevated. So is that becoming a significant challenge when you're investing?
Sure. I think that's a very relevant question, Guy. I will again break it up into two parts. Part number one, what does it mean from an immediate perspective? And most investors typically would just want to look at life over the next 12 months rather than, you know, over the medium to long term. I would say from that perspective, the market valuations do signal that somewhere over the next few quarters, there might just be a pause or there might be a correction, because valuations certainly have moved up compared to their last 10 or 15 year averages. That's part one. But then there's part two to it, which is that you see, India has been on a cyclical slowdown over the last 5 or 6 years. If you look at our earnings growth over the last 6 years, they would be somewhere around 4 to 5%. India's long range earnings growth, which is, let's say, the last 20 year earnings growth, is a number which is maybe around 12 to 13%, very close to India's nominal GDP growth, or slightly higher than India's nominal GDP growth. Whereas what we've seen in the last 6 or 7 years has been a number which is lower than India's nominal GDP growth, which is typically the case whenever the economy goes into a slowdown, and therefore the negative leverage for corporates kicks in, which basically pulls the earnings and the ROEs lower than the revenue growth. What we are witnessing and what we are actually anticipating and projecting right now is that we would, over the coming years, see a revival in earnings, which would lead to the earnings growth be significantly higher than long-term averages, which has been the case in the previous cycle between 2003 to 2010. Capacity utilizations over the last 7-8 years have actually inched up. CapEx hasn't been done in this country over the last 7 years at the rate at which it was done in the previous, I would say, 7 or 8 years. So all of these things factors point towards strong earnings resilience in the coming years. And when viewed in that context, of course, yes, from a near-term perspective, we are expensive compared to our averages. And therefore, I'm saying that maybe investors need to exercise caution. But from a medium to long-term perspective, when you look at earnings revival and put that into the equation, we could still be fine. And therefore, for an investor who's looking at India from a slightly longer term perspective, I would recommend continuing to invest into India, but staggering the investments over the next few quarters. Yeah.
So, I know it's been very good of you to kind of talk to us at a high level about what's going on in the economy and what's going on in the market. But obviously, your real passion and the big driver of the fund performance is much more down there with the individual stocks. So what have been, maybe you could tell us what's really driven the strong performance, and also like give us an indication about what you think might be a strong driver going forwards from at a stock level.
Sure. So you're absolutely right. I think our fund has always taken pride in the fact that what has helped us in terms of creating alpha for our investors is our stock picking, our stock selection, and not as much about our sector selection or taking top down views. And this year was absolutely no different. Our outperformance over the benchmark was again driven by stock selection. And again, what we find as extremely gratifying is that this stock selection was not limited to any one sector. So we had positive attribution coming in from names across the IT services sector, the internet sector, consumer sector, you'll be surprised, even the auto sector, and of course the pharma sector. So companies like L&T Infotech, which has been a huge driver of performance, belongs to the IT sector. We hold a significant chunk of our money into one of the largest internet companies in India. That has done really well. And then, like I mentioned, an auto ancillary as well has done extremely well for us. So it's spread across different lines. And I think our key thesis, which perhaps we did discuss in the previous call, and I'll quickly reiterate this, is our key thesis is that
India remains a consumption-driven economy. Approximately 65 to 70% of India's GDP comes from domestic consumption. And all that we are trying to do is look at those businesses which will continue to attract and recruit more and more consumers, which have already become great brands, which will continue to show resilience in their margins and will continue to generate strong cash flows and in fact continue to witness growth in these cash flows over the next 5 to 10 years. And like I mentioned, we've been able to pick these businesses across different sectors, some way or the other linked to India's consumption, except for the IT services business, which I mentioned, L&D Infotech. All of the others have been linked to India's domestic consumption one way or the other. And that's going to be the way forward for us as well, just like for this year and the previous years.
Okay, and you just mentioned the pharma sector within that. So, I mean, perhaps you could talk a bit more about what opportunities pharma offers for the Indian market.
Yeah, so that's a good question, Guy. I think we are very excited about the pharmaceutical space. I would just say that the overall theme of healthcare is something we are very positive about, and healthcare theme per se can be broken into pharmaceuticals on one side, which is about the domestic formulations market, and on the other side, healthcare services, where we are predominantly bullish on diagnostic companies as a theme, because that's a theme where we are seeing not only growth, but actually very strong return on capital and strong cash flows, unlike the hospitals business, where the capital employed is very high and therefore cash flows are poor. Coming back to India's per capita spend on pharmaceuticals is about $20 per annum. The same number for US is about $1,100 per annum. For developed world, on an average, is $800 per annum. And for emerging markets, on an average, is $200 per annum. So you can see that we are just about 10% of emerging markets. And we are just about, let's say, 3% of the developed market. And I think this is where the big opportunity lies for India. As per capita income is increasing, and therefore as disposable income is increasing for Indians, over the last decade, we have seen that the spend towards pharmaceuticals has increased, and it's been significantly higher than the nominal GDP growth in the country. One key reason for this is that India is an out of market. We have a strong system to have in terms of the NHS. We do have government hospitals in India, but they can barely cater to the bottom 10-15% of the population. The remaining 80-85% of the population actually has to spend out of their own pocket. And therefore, as disposable incomes have increased, the population at large has shown a very high propensity to spend on their healthcare. And I think this is what we continue seeing over the next decade as well. And that's the reason for being so bullish on pharmaceuticals. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Well, look, you've been very generous to take us through all this. I mean, just before I let you go, and I know how late it must be for you with the time difference, but perhaps I could ask just finally, in terms of the dynamics between the Indian and the Chinese corporate sector, and the kind of credibility that Modi's trying to engender, have we seen any meaningful changes or relocations as a result of the corporation tax cuts in 2019, say from China towards India?
Sure. I think all I can report right now is that yes, we've seen a lot of global corporates coming to India over the last 12 to 18 months for a variety of reasons. Corporate tax cuts was just one of them. I think the first set of alarm bells started to ring more than 2 years back, perhaps 3 years back, when China had a huge crackdown on their polluting industries. And you know how the Chinese administration works. Once a decision is taken, it got to be implemented in no time. And therefore, we saw suddenly a lot of businesses shutting shop, which did impact the supply chains going back to manufacturers in the US, UK, parts of Europe, even Japan. I think that was the first set of alarm bells. But purchase managers decided that they have to diversify and therefore have to look for countries like Taiwan, India, Bangladesh, Malaysia, Indonesia, so on. And therefore, inquiries started coming into India, I would say, almost 2.5-3 years back. Corporate tax cuts was another such instance where the Indian government tried to woo a lot of capital into the country by giving huge tax breaks. Point number three, of course, was COVID-19, when people realized that, look, they can't put all their eggs into one basket, and therefore sudden shutdown of China and businesses in China again led to the next set of disruptions. As a consequence of all of these things, we've seen businesses come to India. We've seen a lot of RFQs that have been posted. We also hear from corporates saying that they have been able to win incremental business from not only existing clients, but clients who they have been trying to woo over the last 4 or 5 years. But they were very happy having relationship with Chinese companies. They are still maintaining relationship with Chinese companies, but because of diversification, they've started giving business to Indian corporates as well. And I'm sure that must be the case with some of the companies in Taiwan, Malaysia, Indonesia, etc. So the short answer is yes, we've already seen an impact of that. Apart from the tax breaks, the Modi government has come out with another scheme, which is called the Performance-Linked Incentive Scheme. We've already seen many takers for this. Many global companies have been takers for this. Basically, the scheme is about setting up manufacturing shops. If targets are met in terms of revenues, a certain portion of those revenues will be given as incentives by the government directly to those manufacturers. And the latest one that we've been following over the last 1 month is our minister trying to woo Tesla and trying to convince Tesla that India could perhaps be a better home for them compared to other countries in the region for a manufacturing setup. So yes, some success, but a very, very long road ahead. And of course, I would say that it really requires a lot of coordination amongst various departments of the government to really continue attracting capital. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Well, thanks so much, Ajay. That's a very bright potential vision of the future then for Indian the Indian corporate sector. So thanks to you. Really appreciate you taking us through all of that. And thanks also to all of our listeners. Hopefully you found this this delving into India really fascinating. And we really hope that you're going to join us again on the next Bruin podcast as well.